morning, good afternoon, good evening, and thank you for tuning into this episode of Atlantic Business Spotlight. This is your hostess, Kathleen Sutherland, on behalf of kcsutherland.com. I'm a marketing consultant, a verified copywriter, a certified emotional fitness coach, and a multidisciplinary artist. I help small business owners to increase the visibility and profitability of their business, regardless of your current marketing budget. Today, I'm very pleased and excited to be sitting down with Natalie Davison, one of the co-owners of Marrow Marketing. Located in downtown Moncton, Marrow is a purpose-driven content marketing agency that believes in the power of meaningful connections and relationships. Natalie, thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Natalie, I guess we'll just dive right in to get to the bones of the issue.
Oh, ba-dum-ching!
So, Marrow, what you're made of? Can you tell me what is the concept behind your brand and how it came to you?
Absolutely. It came to me because I'm very, very focused on having real conversations and real relationships as businesses. And I think that at some point along the way, we lost our humanity. And I think it was, you know, during the like 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, when we were really converting to big box and big retail and mass consumption. And we get into this kind of idea that we needed these two personalities and two personas. But at the end of the day, B2C or B2B, it's all just H to H, human to human. And so, you know, I'm on kind of a mission, I guess, myself and my business partner, to get people behaving more like who they actually are on the inside, and not worrying so much about the narrative and fitting kind of the models that are out there. Because at the end of the day, if you do what everybody else is doing, then nobody's going to notice you anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So in your specific line of work in marketing and content creation, what does following the mold look like for most people? What is the stuff that everyone's doing that you're trying to get away from?
Well, brilliant question. And I think that changes every day. You know, like I really do. I think that, and that's kind of what's important about this, is there's so much advice out there, particularly now. Like if you want a marketing coach, and as you would probably know, like there's a lot out there, and there's a lot of people just kind of copying what the last successful person did. And that's unfortunate in a lot of ways, because it takes what may have been a creative concept and oversaturates it, and then it's not different anymore. So for example, you know, Kira came in one day, my business partner, and she said to me about 3 months ago, and she's like, I think I'm over emojis on social right now. And I was like, why? And she goes, well, because when you see them, you know, in this certain way, so it's like paragraph emoji, paragraph emoji, paragraph emoji, which a lot of people are doing right now. She's like, all of a sudden, I just assume someone's trying to sell me something. And I just looked at her and I was like, that's a really brilliant insight. And so we went and spent some time doing research. And sure enough, the majority of messages structured that way on Instagram or even Facebook were some kind of call to action from a business. Right. So when you think, oh, look, I'm, you know, I've got this kind of interesting new way to communicate, if the only people doing it are businesses that are trying to get someone to take action, all of a sudden, it's very obvious. And so I believe that the best ads don't look like ads.
Right.
And what looks like an ad changes as we change.
So you think there's a formula that sort of moves with the trends, and then most people kind of see what others are doing and then replicate that as a primary strategy?
Yeah, I do. Like not so much in terms of like a formula per se, but I think that there's just a lot of, I mean, it's very, very challenging to be a marketer right now because everything changes so fast. So, you know, Instagram stories didn't exist 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. IGTV didn't exist 6 months ago. I do an Instagram workshop, and I had my slides in 2017 were completely different than my slides in 2018. My content was completely different. I had somebody that went both times, and they said this was a completely new workshop. And I was like, well, that's because Instagram is a completely new platform. So while platforms are reinventing themselves at the pace that they are, which they have to do to remain competitive, then we need to be learning basically every day. And so rather than, you know, people are trying to learn every day, but if they're learning just by kind of copying what everybody else is doing, unfortunately, that's going to burn out quickly. And I think things become obvious before we realize. So we fall into that trap, and I have myself, of posting the paragraph emoji, or whatever the thing du jour is, because we just, you know, it worked a couple times, and so we fall into that trap and don't realize that, oh wait, I'm looking super transactional right now because this is what people are doing to get email signups or whatever, you know? So I think that's really important. The only way that you can really stand out is by actually being yourself. And that's kind of the point of Marrow and what you're made of, is that is the way that you can build real relationships, is having the courage to be vulnerable enough to say, like, hey, you know, I'm actually this other thing over here, and that's what people really want to see.
I think there's like some insecurity and perhaps confusion about how to approach that for business owners. For example, sometimes I get the question, well, how do I know what is the voice of my business?
Yeah, you listen. So that's the thing. And this is exceptionally hard to do for yourself, by the way. It's like I do it for a living for other people, and I struggle to work on it for us. So it's not an easy thing to do for yourself, but it's really important that you have very, very clear values around the purpose of your business, and values that don't just relate to profit. like what else, what other contribution are you going to make as a business? What else is your legacy going to be? And really give some time to that so that you can create things like your voice and boundaries around that, that you can follow and that will make sense for you. So for example, with our clients, you know, we go through a process, so we call our brand integrity checklist, and we establish things like, does your brand swear? And if so, how much? And which swears does it use? Maybe your brand doesn't ever swear. Maybe your brand says BS, but the real word, I don't know if your podcast swears, so I'm not.
It can swear.
And, you know, some people's brand says the F word. And it's really, again, it's about stepping back and creating those intentional boundaries so that you know what to do when you're speaking in the future. But part of that comes from listening to who you are in a very, very self-aware, possibly uncomfortably self-aware way. So when I say you, I mean you and the people within your business. And then really also listening to who your customer is. Because at the end of the day, if your customer or the person you want to influence, if their boundaries don't align with yours, then, you know, we have an issue. So it's really about saying, okay, who is organically going to connect with who I am organically, and let's build a business relationship around that, figuring out who that buyer persona is, so that you don't spend all your time trying to be somebody else. Instead, you create the freedom to be exactly who you are.
Or trying to cater to an audience that's way too undefined and like casting a net too far.
That's like not 100%, because then that's like 80% of everybody's problem in business, I think. Everybody I meet. I always say that like 80% of what I do is getting people to focus. And it's very scary, I think, as a business owner to say, oh, my buyer persona is this person, because you feel like you're leaving people on the table. That doesn't mean you won't work with other people. It means that you are focusing your conversations and your content on that person who is most likely to get the most value out of what you do, so that you can attract those people that are really, really going to value what you do and not try to discount it because they don't understand it. So really, that's kind of the point of a buyer persona. And it gives you the opportunity to write content and communications to a person, even if that person is a semi-fictional representation of a real person. It allows you to have more conversational language in your content, and of course that's again how the readers feel connected to you, because you're speaking to them like a human instead of a business bot. A business bot. That's I'm gonna start saying that all the time now.
So you mentioned H to H, so human to human, and I also heard you use the word influence. So influencer is a hot word that's getting thrown around a lot right now in terms of marketing, and And just business in general and personal development, like everywhere. Everyone wants to be an influencer. What is
Who
that
wouldn't?
What is an influencer?
Well, I think that like the perception is an influencer is somebody who like rolls out of bed in the morning, snaps a selfie and gets paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for that, which, you know, may or may not be true. But, you know, the business of influencers is really interesting to me because I think that it is... in its purest form, it is amazing and could be incredibly effective. However, like anything newish, and you know, influencers, the way that we are seeing them, particularly on Instagram and social and blogging right now, is newish in marketing. And so when you have anything newish, oftentimes the people who benefit the most, aka the influencers, figure out ways to leverage that before maybe the clients have figured that out. So one of the things you see right now are people who are influencers doing campaigns that don't necessarily align with what they're made of or who they are. So for example, you'll see people doing, you know, somebody, maybe you're a fashion blogger and you're doing an influencer campaign for a brand that just does not make sense with the conversations you've been having. And so therefore, it's not believable to your audience anymore that you would have purchased that product. That's really, it looks super transactional. What you're doing is losing trust with your audience. But on the side of brands, I think that brands are still, in many cases, measuring the value of an influencer by the size of their audience. We really need to start tying that to like business outcomes. So just because somebody has a large audience on Instagram or Facebook or their blog doesn't necessarily mean that that audience is the ideal buyer for the brand who's engaging them. And I say that with a grain of salt because anybody can get more fans. So we can buy more fans. There are tricks we can do to get more fans. There are ways to inflate those numbers if that is the only metric that brands are using to decide what to pay the influencer.
Right.
So I think it's a slippery slope. At this point, I think that people need to spend a little more time really trying to understand the long-term value. And we get caught up in these, you know, very short-term mindsets sometimes. But the reality is, if you're an influencer and you're taking any campaign that comes your way, but you're weakening your relationship with your audience, then that's not going to serve your brand over the long term. And if you're a brand using influencers, again, who don't align, well, that's just a waste of your money. So it's really important that brands and influencers alike step back and look at these arrangements and start to think, okay, what kind of real outcome can I drive here? How can we move this? How can we use this campaign to move everybody toward their goals? And if not, then to have the courage to move on and really, again, focus on your buyer persona. It all always comes back to that for me.
I don't know if it's the best example of this, but I keep having that Squarespace Keanu Reeves ad like in my head. It's just an ad of Keanu Reeves, and I think it says, Keanu Reeves knows you need to make a website or something like this. It's like totally random.
Which, like,
totally
when
relevant.
Would Keanu Reeves ever make his own website? Good point. Yeah, that's a great example. I honestly, like, specifically Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons, don't hate me if you're listening. But Tim Hortons specifically... You know, they just kind of spray and pray with their influencer strategy, and it doesn't make sense sometimes. Like when you see somebody who's clearly a Starbucks person doing a Timfluencer ad, it doesn't make sense and it's not very believable. But there are a lot of people who are very loyal to Tim Hortons that they should be targeting. For example, I used to work in home building, and like that would be a great place for them to be spending their money because our job sites would be cleaned up at the end of the day with like 30 Tim Hortons cups on them.
Right.
So it's really, again, about like, you know, who's actually buying your product and who values it the most. Like, go talk to them. Like, you don't need to waste your time and money and or anybody else's speaking to the wrong people.
Do you think that as consumers, we're sensitive to a gimmick when we see one, or are we still just so oversaturated with all the stimulation that, what do you feel, what's the level of consciousness from your estimation?
Oh my gosh, I talk about this a lot actually. We are bombarded with sales messages, like insane. Now obviously, people like you and I, we can see them a little sooner because it's what we do, so we know how these tactics work, but You know, we were never intended as humans to receive the amount of information in a day that we do anyway. So just information alone, we're overloaded. We have more than we were ever supposed to. And then add in the amount of sales messages that we get. And it's just absolutely crazy. So people say all the time, oh, we have the attention span of a goldfish. It's 8 seconds. That's like a pretty common statement. But we're still binge watching Netflix for a full weekend at a time. So I find that it's not super believable. We have more attention than ever for things that really matter to us. Mm-hmm. So then it comes down to, okay, well, what's this 8 second thing? And I read an article and I've quoted it about a million times, that we actually have an 8 second filter. And so basically what's happening with us is that we receive an information and we take kind of 3 to 8 seconds to decide whether somebody's trying to get something from us or whether it's a give.
Right.
We basically have that filter to say,
is
this a give or a take? Is this, is this information for me too that's going to help me, or is somebody want something from me? And we have this very, 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 very highly attuned filter to that, which we didn't have in the 80s when we would watch entire commercials happily.
And the commercials were longer than 22 seconds.
Yeah, and we'd watch these long commercials and happily, whatever. But that doesn't happen anymore because we don't have time. We also watch TV, if we're even watching TV, with 2 to 3 other screens. So we've got our phone, usually an iPad for commercials. I mean, there's a lot going on when we're consuming that kind of interruptive message. But the reality is we've got this short little filter. And so we decide, is this a sales message or not? So when I say the best ads don't look like ads, that's what I'm talking about. Is if you've had 5 sales messages that day that are back to the old, I'm going to pick on this right now, but the old paragraph emoji, and you've seen that 5 times that day, and every time it was somebody trying to sell you something, you're not going to read those anymore. Mm-hmm. You don't even know you're doing it. And so we spend a lot of time trying to figure out as early as possible, what are those things that are happening? It was like quote cards a few years ago. Everybody was doing quote cards, and then all of a sudden nobody read them anymore because there were too many quote cards.
Or inspirational memes.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like a quote on a mountaintop. I mean, now the reason, again, not to pick on people who are doing quotes on mountaintops, like if it's working for you, that's great. But the reality is we are getting more and more of it. So I had a client one time frustrated because they were trying to run an Instagram ad and they were trying to just boost a quote. So that they could get more followers, a Facebook, and they were trying to get more followers on their Facebook page. And they wanted to boost a quote, and Facebook wouldn't let it run. They said there's too much text. And so the question was then, well, why are they doing that? And I was like, well, because Facebook's job is to keep users on the platform. That's what they have to do. And so if their job is to keep users on the platform, and images with a whole bunch of text now have been proven to make users leave the platform, they're not going to let you run an ad like that. So it keeps coming back to this kind of idea that we're running around trying to find all these tips and tricks, but really tips and tricks are going to get you nowhere, because it means that if there's somebody's tips and tricks, they've already been done quite a bit and they're probably getting kind of the end of their lifespan because everything's changing so fast. Sounds pretty depressing, eh?
Well, it sounds like there's an opportunity, and I'm going to bring this around to a topic that I know gets you excited, but I'm thinking too, so what I see is a lot of marketers are going to grab the attention through the use of creativity, but it's like the misuse of creativity because it's like pointless creativity. So I see a lot of marketing done and it's something cute, it's something relatable, it's something weird. So it has your attention, you're within that window, but then there's no like link to that with a discernible call to action or something that looks like a coherent brand. So what do you feel is the role of creativity in marketing?
Yeah, I always say, before I answer your question, not all attention is good attention.
Right.
And I think that sometimes in marketing people miss that. But, you have you're going to have a legacy here. I mean, everything we're doing right now, even if you're not doing it online, somebody's going to take a picture of it and put it online, or they have the ability to, because we have so many billions of people walking around publishing every day. So the reality is everything you do in terms of your messaging, communications, and marketing, it's going to be part of your legacy and your grandkids might be able to look it up. So I highly encourage everybody to think about that before they really go for the craziest attention grab that they can think of. Like, would you want your grandchildren reading this? But the role of creativity in this is everything. Really, it's everything. It comes back. The only thing we have is creativity. It's the only thing that we innately have, and we all have it. And people, some people be like, oh, I'm not creative. And I'm like, oh, who hurt you? Like, really, who hurt you to make you say that? What happened in your life that you feel that you can't say that? And it breaks my heart because I couldn't say it about myself until 2 or 3 years ago. So I understand entirely what it's like to have creative shame and to hide that about yourself. And my greatest fear was that someone would look at me and say that I'm not creative because I dare to work in this space and I dare to put myself out there. Now, luckily that did happen about 6 months ago and I lived through it, so now I'm not afraid of it anymore. So we're all good. But, you know, we have a lot of creative scars, and they come usually from something that happened in our youth. But we walk around with these kind of narratives in our head about who we are that are, we treat them like they're absolutes. This absolute is absolutely amazing. It's amazing to me that we take these, again, you know, these opinions of one person or maybe a few people, and we hold them so dear that they literally are etched on our souls. And we walk around thinking, you know, I'm not this or I am that. And we choose careers and we choose paths and we try to brand ourselves and we wear certain clothing and we do all kinds of things to try and play the role of what someone told you you should be. And I work a lot with my clients on trying to remember, what did they do before that happened? Like, what did you really do when you were a kid? What did you spend when nobody was bothering you and you had like that, the free time, the kind of free time that we can't imagine right now, where literally you have no obligations? What did you go do?
And this would have been before the internet as well. So
yeah.
Back in the days of yeah. Like playing outside.
Like, and your parents locked you out probably, or mine did, but anyway, I'm kidding. But you know, when, like, what did you spend that time doing? And then that's probably going to be your first clue to reconnect with your creativity. So, you know, on the topic of marketing, I mean, having the courage to create something is like, it's really just getting back in touch with who you are in the first place. And we don't understand how disconnected we've become from that until we start to make our way back to it. And so, you know, I talk a lot in our marketing about, we talk about what you're made of, but we talk a little bit about our families and our personal lives. And we share some of the things that are truly, you know, unique to us. Like, I did an email today to our list, and I talked about how Kira spent the weekend, and actually she's still today, trying to wrangle an escaped pot-bellied pig that's running around her sister's land. And literally they've put out all these water jugs and, you know, this food everywhere, trying to capture this little pig. And here's Kira and her sister running around this farm, and everything's kind of on hold until they capture this like baby pig that's super fast, right? And so, you know, so I wrote about that in our newsletter today, because again, it is who we are. But I tied it into my message, and I brought it into kind of what we're up to today, because the only thing we have is who we are. And so as an organization, as Meryl, my business partner Kira and I are complete opposites. And so we talk about that constantly, because that is uniquely ours. That relationship is something we made, we created. Mm-hmm. And we usually like attribute creativity to, you know, you can go out, like you're a painter or you're an artist, or we give it these huge expectations, when really, like, engaging in a relationship with another person is creation. That is creativity. Mm-hmm. Recognizing what's special about that is creativity. Going out and like gardening or cooking a nice meal for your family, if you bring your heart and soul to it, you're creating. And we don't create in the way that the generations before us did. Like, my grandparents had gardens and, they had 7 kids and they had a whole bunch of other stuff going on, but they were constantly, you know, working outdoors or tending to their flower beds, constantly engaging with their creativity, whether they realized it or not. But we today are such passive consumers, and we can lose ourselves in things like the internet, and we're not making anymore, we're not creating anymore, instead we're just consuming. And I think that really when you go from creating to consuming, that's where kind of dangerous stuff starts to happen, and we start to really think about ourselves in a different way.
So I have to ask, you said up until around 2 years ago, you would not have called yourself necessarily a creative person. So what was going on in your world, in your business at that time? What was the aha moment?
When I decided that as a creative person? Well, I lost my job, and that I loved, like loved. I would have never quit my job, but sadly my position was eliminated and it ended for me. And I was so mad and humiliated and just like, it was just not a good time in my life. But anyway, you know, c'est la vie. So I think went into, I'm very fortunate. I don't suffer with my mental health very often, but I did after that. And so I went into this kind of like funk where I wouldn't get off my couch and I was binge watching Pretty Little Liars and other teen dramas. And you really, really enjoying my life.
So just taking a moment.
That might sound, yeah, for a couple months. It might sound actually really great to a lot of people, but one of my friends came over and staged an intervention and asked me to go see a therapist. And of course, like, I was not in a place where, it's interesting when we say, you know, when we say that to people, like, just get off the couch and go for a walk. Like, I was, like, if you're stuck on the couch, you, like, it's not that easy. Yeah. So for someone to come and be like, I think you should go talk to somebody, I'm like, no, thank you. Like, I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'm planted here. But luckily, she was persistent. And so so in defiance to her suggestion, I said, fine, I'll go talk to somebody, but I'm going to go to a medium instead. And I'd never gone to a medium before. It was very, like, it was just super, super random for me. But I did. I went to this medium who, there's just no way that these types of things could have occurred if she was not the real deal, so I'm a believer now. So I went to see this medium, and super long story short, my husband's grandmother, who passed in 2010, whose name is Natalie, if you guys forgot, my name's Natalie, so her name is Natalie, and she was this, like, an energy like you've never met in your life. She's just this really, really passionate artist and like a true artist in every way. And so the medium said, you know, I've got this grandmother and coming through, and she's wearing a big fur hat, so that I knew it was her immediately. And she had a lot of messages for me, but she had kind of one central message. And I was like, you know, I was feeling very sorry for myself at that time in my life. And so I said, oh, should I go get a job or just stay home with the kids? And she said, you're an artist with no art. You're a creative who doesn't create. So get to work or get to work, essentially. If you're not going to do something with your gifts, just go get a job. And I was like, whoa, well, that was something. And so I came home and I'm like, what do I do with this? Like, I think she might be right, but I don't know what to do with this. And so I started with some of my like really artsy friends and like kind of whispered to them like, hey, I'm an artist with no art. What do you think I should do with that? And you know, they were obviously, because they're creatives themselves, they were very supportive. And my one friend Peggy got me an adult coloring book. I'm not even kidding. That's where
those
I started.
Are awesome. Yeah. Love those.
I started with an adult coloring book, and I also worked on renovating my house and scraping wallpaper and just doing things that were creation, but I didn't realize it. I didn't understand the scraping 7 layers of wallpaper, which I did, which was very therapeutic, could possibly be creation. I just didn't get that. But creating, whether you're drawing a picture or writing or digging up dirt in your front lawn, you are out making something happen. And you are seeing something that somebody didn't see before. And that is what we have to do as people. Like, we all have to. Every one of us is meant to do this. And I feel like how happy you are with your life is kind of in direct proportion to how creatively you're living. I have nothing to back that up other than my own personal experience, but yeah.
So it sounds like it has to do with the flow of energy more mm-hmm. than anything else, calling one thing an art and yeah. one thing not an art. It's all about how we're expressing and moving through the world.
100%. And so, you know, my creative scar that made me decide I was never going to do the work that I now do. I was like 8 and I... So it's all about moving energy. I'm a very hyper person. I have a lot more energy than my body can process. And so I actually had this involuntary thing that I would do when I would go deep into my imagination, and I would flap my hands, like full on flap my hands in front of my face. So it wasn't even like they were down by my side. Like I would just stand there flapping my hands in another world, oblivious to everybody around me. So it was like the very like elephant in the room type situation. Like I was somewhere else. My hands were flapping. And of course, people thought this was hilarious. But interestingly, I think it was about 8 when I became very conscious of it. But it wasn't kids making fun of me. It was adults, likely well-meaning, who were, you know, wanting me to be able to go and participate in the world in a productive way, teasing me, saying, you know, are you gonna fly away? And da 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 da. And again, like, I don't want to sound like I'm glad that I can sit through a meeting and not flap my hands in front of people. So I'm glad that that experience happened. Everybody's okay. We all love each other. But you know, it's not like a great life trauma. But it's important to understand when we're interacting with kids that, like, my gift is really understanding people on another level. So when I talk to my clients, I go deeper than I really even thought I could and extract things from them that they don't expect. And then we build that into beautiful brand narratives and stories that they can tell about their business. And when I was 8 and flapping my hands in another world, I was also telling stories. It was just in my head. And so at some point, to stop flapping my hands, I had to stop telling stories. And so I stopped doing that very thing that I needed to come back to eventually someday. And so it's like when we're interacting with children and they have these moments, it's really important. And I think it's our responsibility to recognize what's actually, like, what else is happening at that moment. Like, if I'm able to connect with energy on a whole other level when I'm flapping my hands, I mean, you know, then there's something to that, that we didn't. And then after that, my mom would buy me creative writing notebooks and different things. And I was like, no, I don't want to write stories. That's stupid. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of shame for a long time about it. Now, interestingly, as an adult, I have a couple of like slick moves I do to avoid flapping my hands in front of you. But like, I'm sure you can tell my hands are moving this whole time. Mm-hmm. I'm picking up things. I'm drawing on things. I can't not move my hands. There's just energy to those extremities that I can't manage. But I do things like doodle. I have a really slick move that I'll do sometimes where, like, if it's cold, I'll pretend that I'm warming my hands, but I'm just doing that to move energy through them. So I do stuff like that. And when I'm alone, I caught myself last year standing in my bedroom thinking about a talk I was writing, and I was just standing there flapping my hands. So I didn't know I still did it. But my husband then, you know, admitted that he's seen me, like, stop as he walks in the room. So I've been doing it apparently this whole time. Little did I know.
So what's your advice to the business owner who's perhaps creative by nature and worried about being judged or having that adult experience in the business world of someone telling them to, like, put a lid on it, or just the fear we have about being who we are?
Yeah, I think that so we get a lot of feedback and advice, which is lovely sometimes. But I keep talking about buyer personas, and I'm going to come back to that again, because the reality is even well-meaning feedback, if it's not going to help you toward your specific business goals and to reach your specific buyer persona, then it doesn't matter. And so I think that it's very easier said than done. Granted, I've had to take a lot of hits and they've hurt over the years. But every time I take another one, I step back and say, was that my buyer persona? Was that my ideal customer? Is that somebody that what they think matters to my goals matters to their goals. And if so, then I take that advice. But oftentimes the people that have a challenge with who I am and what I'm made of, they're not my buyer persona, because everything I do is about what you're made of. So anybody who has a problem with, you know, with that stuff, they're just outside of that circle of influence. And I think it's really important to understand as business owners that don't be all things to all people. It's not going to be profitable, first of all. The people that don't see your value are going to make you work so hard for what they pay you that it's not going to be worth it. And they're going to question and challenge and take so much more time that you would have been better off without them in the first place. And so if you can understand your unique gifts, your unique and your organization's unique gifts and unique what makes you special, what makes you tick, what's true about you, then you go out and find who are those people that also think that is important, and that's where you focus. But chasing the wrong people will burn you out, and it's just not profitable. Your business won't sustain itself that way.
Yeah, it kind of prompts me the thought too, like how easy and readily sometimes people will provide negative feedback, but we don't always share the positive stuff. So I think it's easy to lose track of, you know, how many people we are influencing in a positive way, and we just have no idea because they've never told us, whether it's on social media or out in the community or just so many levels.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, it's really, I don't want to knock advice, because advice can be really helpful if it's coming from the right people. But I say it all the time to even people I'm working with, is like, look, don't take my advice if you and I don't align from a values perspective. So, you know, I'm working on, and I teach my clients how to build businesses they're going to work in for the long haul, that they're going to have repeat customers with long-term relationships. And, you know, it costs 5 times more to get a new customer than to keep a customer than to get a new customer. And so it's very profitable to keep these long-term relationships. But if you're somebody who's looking to, say, launch a tech product that you download one time, you never download it again, so you're 100% of your success is based on quick transactions, and maybe your business goal is not even to work in it for the rest of your life, but instead to sell it to another software company. Well, don't take my advice, because it's wrong for you. My advice isn't, you know, I'm not a specialist in that, and I don't focus on that, because that's not what my buyers, that's just not who I am, and it's not who my buyers are. So, like I always say, don't take my advice, or don't take anybody's advice, unless they're doing the very thing that you hope to do. And so, you know, that's what I kind of want to leave it on, is like, I wear a lot of leopard, and we joke about my pleather pants, and I show up in the world exactly the way I feel like, because my buyer persona is okay with that. But if I chose to do something different, and I have before in my life, then maybe that looked a lot more like a gray suit every day. And that's fine if that's your choice and that's what, you know, your audience wants you to show up as. But I encourage everybody to really think about how they can be different by being themselves.
Natalie, where is the best place to find more information about Marrow, or if we want to connect with you, where can we do that?
Oh, thank you for asking. You could do that on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, and you could do that at our website, which is madeofmarrow.com, where we have a blog and other resources, or Instagram. So we're on all those places.
Well, Natalie, I think this has been lots of fun. We might have to connect again and continue the conversation. Lots to learn here. So thank you again for spending time with me this afternoon.
Again, I would like to thank you for tuning into this episode of Atlantic Business Spotlight. On behalf of kcsutherland.com, this is your hostess, Kathleen Sutherland. If you or someone you know has a great story in business here in Atlantic Canada, you can reach me at info@kcsutherland.com, and I would love to hear from you. If you are a small business owner or have an interest in strategic marketing for small business, check the podcast description for the Facebook link and join my group. Until next time.